glad you're here. We're glad you're here. Fellowship's sweeter knowing you're near.
Hi, listening friend. Welcome to the Monday edition of Mark and Friends. It's November 11th, 2013. We salute and honor our veterans today. Thank you, God, for all the men and women that have served in our armed forces, that have protected the freedoms we so greatly enjoy, that have defended our nation, and have stood up to tyranny, to terrorism, to powers and principalities that war against the freedoms that God has granted to all mankind. Lots could be recapped, referenced, and referred to, as last night the Singing Men of GNN did a great job at the Living Flag. It was a special tribute at the Muhammad Christian Church to honor our veterans. It was their 9th annual presentation of the Living Flag, and the Singing Men opened up the program, which included a few patriotic selections and a number of Christmas songs. And before that, on Friday and Saturday, I and 9 other men headed over to Indianapolis for an Act Like Men conference with the scriptural theme 1 Corinthians 16:13 and 14. Be watchful, stand firm in the faith, act like men, be strong, let all that you do be done in love. Oh, I'm sure you're going to hear all about it on the Wednesday edition of Mark and Friends when I have co-host Pastor Jason Schiffo in the studio. He organized this trip to Indianapolis, and we had a stayover a few minutes from the conference center. There was 12,600 men in attendance. More to say about that on Wednesday, but we're going to go right into an interview that was broadcast a year ago where I had Ernest and Helen Thorpe in the studio. They live in Wapella. Wanza Lutz said, "Mark, you have to interview my uncle. He's a POW from World War II. He was shot down over the North Seas. He has an incredible testimony." And so today and tomorrow, to honor our veterans, you're going to hear that interview rebroadcast. Here's Wanza Lutz introducing her uncle.
Well, I'm very pleased and proud to be able to introduce my beloved uncle, Ernest Thorpe, from Wapella, Illinois.
Now, you mentioned a lot of people would be familiar with his name. How come?
He is well-established in the Clinton community. He's been active in civic organizations. He's spoken often to schools and organizations telling his story. And he's been in the community all his whole life. And he's been a Seed Corn affiliation. So he's well known and a common household name, I believe, for many households in DeWitt County.
Now, Ernest, I have some literature in front of me and some news clippings and a reprint of your diary. And it seems like, from my short understanding of just getting to know you in the last few minutes here, and thanks for coming into the studio and bringing your wife, Helen, and we're going to have you introduce her in a minute, but you're a veteran of World War II. In fact, you were a POW. And so I'm hoping throughout this broadcast and maybe even tomorrow, we can glean some of the things that you learned, even through the tragedy of war, even through living through a couple tornadoes, being shot down, being in the North Sea, that you still held on to your faith because you knew there was a God helping, assisting you, and guiding you. So I'd like to hear some of your faith journey and also some of the recounts that you've put into this diary from being a POW and some of your war experience. But before that, I think God's brought this woman into your life. In fact, rumor has it that 70-year-olds can still have crushes on people. So tell us a little about Helen.
Well, she's a woman that I've known for a good many years because I was on the school board when they hired her as a secretary at Wapella. And of course, people said, well, that's when the romance started. Well, in a pig's eye, because I was married and had a child. She was engaged to be married, so that was the end of that. But then the climax kind of come years later when I had my second wife in a house nursing home in Leroy, Illinois. And of course, I knew who she was and talked to her, and she kept a lot of scrapbooks. And I was wanting to find out some information about Leroy at the CCT camp, because I knew some people who was there whenever that was the thing of the country at that time. And so she got her scrapbook out and found it for me. So once in a while, I'd call her or talk to her. And then when my wife was in the nursing home at Leroy for 3 years. And then, of course, when she passed away, I was single. And, of course, this heat stroke that hit me, I didn't drink any water for the whole day and more out in the airport. So that brought that on for heat stroke. And, of course, then that's when my sister Ruth told her what about that I was at the hospital. And, of course, when she called and told my daughter Ruth that she had a crush on me, I was quite surprised. Of course, she'd been single for 12 years, so she was a widower. So, of course, I kind of roused my curiosity a little bit more, so I thought, well, I'll stop and visit with her a little bit at her library in Leroy. So that one thing led to another, and we'd end up getting married a year later.
You'll be 92 in February, right. So you were in your mid-80s.
Oh, heavens, yes.
You still had the eyes for this Helen. So, Helen, let's get your point of view, because I know beforehand you said you had heard that he had had this heat stroke and was in the hospital, and I think it was one of his family members you said, you know, I have a crush on him. So you're in your 70s at this point, right?
I'm 83 now. I was almost 80 when I started going with him.
Oh, jeez. Wow. I love this love story here. So you were in your late 70s, almost 80s. Mm-hmm. Now you've been married about 6 years?
6 years. Just 6 years, October 8th.
Okay, six.
My son lives in Tennessee, and he calls on the month anniversary every month on the 8th. Mm-hmm. And sometimes he'll call and he'll start talking, and I'll wonder why he's calling to say, Mom, it's your anniversary. Well, I kind of forgot.
Well, tell me what it's like to be in your late 70s and starting to have a crush on a gentleman. What was it about Ernest that you appreciated or you respected?
Well, he's just been well known as long as I lived. I was born and raised around Wapella and went to school there and graduated in 47, and he graduated in 39. Of course, he went off to college and I went off to work. I've always known of the Thorpe family. They have a real good reputation. And so when I got a chance to go with him, I thought, and I have this joke that Ernest gets tired of hearing, I was a widow 12 years in Leroy, and I was prominent. I worked at the library, at the museum, and worked at the school 15 years. But there just wasn't any eligible men. And I said, those Leroy men were deaf, dumb, and blind. They didn't give me a date. And so when I got a boyfriend, that hit the town, believe me. Well, now, who is this Helen going with? Anyway, have you heard? Well, he's a Thorpe. So I had one of them ask me, Helen, are you going with Fred Thorpe? No, he's deceased. Well, are you going with Frank Thorpe? No, he's married. Well, there's a lot of Thorpes. Which one have you got? I said, I've got Ernest on the string.
Oh, jeez.
So Ernest, he's just a fine gentleman.
Well, it sounds like you had a real ministry with some elderly people, being a caretaker, helping and assisting. So is that something that you've done for many years?
Well, see, I worked at the school for 15 years, like I say. And when we went to computers, I'm pretty literate, I guess. I could do it pretty good, but it bothered me a lot. And so I gave up that job and just started caring for people in their homes. I cared for 32 different people at different hours of the day in their home, and I loved that work, and I was good at it. And I've got many friends left over there yet, even though some of them said, Helen, don't leave town and marry that Ernest Thorpe. We want you here to take care of us. And I said, I think I've been there and done that. I think I'll just go marry him. So we've had a good, happy time. His health's failing a little, and mine is, too. I've had two serious knee surgeries since I married him in 6 years, and really need another one that I'm putting off. But we just take each day one at a time, and if he wants to go somewhere, I let the dishes in the sink and go with him and take him. We belong to Flying Farmers, which he enjoys a lot. And I'm not saying I'm crazy about the airplane, though.
Yeah. Well, I know Ernest, rumor has it, has been a pilot, I think licensed for like 70 years or something. And I think that's one of the things that recently, you, because of some eye surgery or something, you had to give up after 70 years. But you've had a very active life for many, many years. And I want to spend some of the time just having you recount some of the stories of how you saw God at work in your life. But before we get to the focus on World War II and you being a POW, for many of our listeners, we have a lot of senior saints, you know, growing up in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. Tell us about some of your life experiences.
Well, of course, some of the most important ones to me that I remember so very well was when we had a tornado in 1927 that came through our country and decided to hit us broadside. And I was 6 years old at the time. And I remember being with the hired men. My dad was someplace else and cutting a tree down. He decided the way the weather looked, maybe they better go to the house. So they went to the house, and as they looked out to the west, there was a tornado coming sweeping across down there. So they jumped in the house, barricaded the house, locked the door. And first thing you know, everything started crashing in, and the two hired men laid on top of him. Mm. And I thought, well, we're just laying down to die. I mean, that was my thinking at that time. And my dad credits those hired men to save him alive at 6 years old. That was one of the things that was outstanding. And as I went through life, my dad and mother were, especially my dad was a very faithful church worker in the Methodist Church. And he encouraged me to teach and to do things in church and back me up in whatever I tried to do, which I appreciated very much. And he was a good Christian man. So I was right in a little country church, was our church. And of course, I became a lay leader after coming back from service. And I became a lay speaker. In fact, I was conference chairman of the Champaign District of the Methodist Church for a time, and I was a certified lay speaker. So I talked to a lot of churches in Champaign County and all in Vermilion. So I got around this area and looked quite a bit to different churches as a speaker and as a lay speaker. And so of course, then standing in civilian life, of course, another big event that was very, and I gave my soul to God and Jesus Christ when I was 16 years old in a little country church called Praise Center Church. And the church still exists today, but not as a home, not as a church.
Now, that time when you came to Christ or you accepted Jesus at 16, was there a visiting evangelist?
Oh, yes. It was the Hellfire
Revivals.
Hellfire and Brimstone. And I took it pretty hard. And I remember my comments to my dad. Well, he's taking it pretty hard. I said, well, yes, he hoped to. And of course, in a letter that I read of my dad after he had passed away and given to me by a minister who got the letters, was how my dad thought of me as a son. And I had never had any idea that he felt that way about it. It made me cry. Because he wasn't a sentimental man. And I thought if anybody needed to go right, it'd be his son, Ernest. And I appreciate that because my dad had 8 kids, so I felt like I was kind of singled out, but I don't think so because all my family went go to church and are believers in God.
And your parents, I'm guessing, knowing your age, were born in the late
1800s? Oh, yeah, 1880 and 1895.
Now, I know you had at least 4 sisters. How many brothers and sisters?
And 1 brother and had 5 sisters.
1 brother and 5 sisters. Okay, so you at least had 1 brother. I was thinking you might have had all sisters.
My brother was 12 years older than I was, so he was the boss.
Okay. Well, and that's not too uncommon for your generation and prior generations, and even my dad was born in 1919, but oftentimes they lived out their love, if you will, but shared few words many times.
Exactly, and that's right. He didn't. Mm-hmm. He didn't say anything. I had no idea he felt that way, though. He always encouraged me. Mm-hmm. And anything I wanted to do, when I learned to fly, going to college, and staying in college because I wanted to quit and go home and farm. Mm-hmm. And no, my dad was a great man.
Mm-hmm. And thank you, God, I'm thinking, because I could tell you got choked up a little thinking about reading those words, and thank you, God, that they were preserved and that you got to see that maybe he didn't verbalize it, though he was supportive and caring, but how he truly felt and reflected over the son of mine, Ernest, I love him.
Yeah, he didn't flatter me a bit, but he encouraged me.
Yeah.
And he didn't cheer me on, so that meant a whole lot, more so now than then at the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, what was your progression then, and how did you enlist?
I was lucky enough to go to college, and on my last, I enlisted in 1942 at the University of Illinois. That's where I graduated from. I wanted to be in the Air Force because, in the meantime, at State Normal, I went there 2 years. I got my license at State Normal, the pilot. Mm-hmm. And since I wasn't going to be a teacher, I transferred to the University of Illinois my junior year.
And this is back in 1942?
41.
41. And then did you enlist? Or?
Yes, I enlisted. I seen was it Ronald Reagan? No, Jimmy Stewart taxiing up in an Army airplane. And quite a show. Well, I got to admit, Jimmy Stewart was always a favorite of mine anyway. So he was a good character to follow. He was a good Christian guy.
Mm-hmm. And as your faith began to grow, you're 16 years old, and like many people with a fire and brimstone message, you know, you're kind of terrified and nobody wants to go to hell. So you kind of say, I want to make that commitment to follow God. Would you say at that point in your life it was a close or intimate relationship or just something that I know I'm to follow the rules, the Ten Commandments are important, certainly there's a God that's kind of easy to understand, but would you say, like, did you pray every day, or did that kind of, did you learn about that relationship?
Maybe as much as I should have, but the thing was, I didn't want to miss church. Mm-hmm. Oh, I take it back. I went first day week, we had an airplane on the farm. I flew all Sunday morning taking rides up, and my dad said, son, I didn't buy that airplane for you to fly on Sunday morning. You're supposed to be going to church. And I never went to that again.
Never missed again. Yeah, the old school, it's a shame we don't have more of it today, but church was a very important part of everyone's life. And then Sunday, the Sunday Sabbath, was very important for many people, either not to work or at least to focus on family time and maybe stop the regular workday routine, if you will.
But, yeah, my dad was a farmer and a seedsman and a custom operator man, but it was very, very, very few times I ever knew that he ever worked on Sunday.
Yeah, yeah. So you enlist in World War II. You have aspirations of flying and being a pilot?
Right, that was my goal.
And then what was the progression? What happened next?
Well, after I enlisted, of course, I thought I'd go right in. Well, the cadets' clubs were full at the time, so they didn't call me in until March of 43. I had almost 9 months, and they said, stay in college because you'll make a better soldier. And so I was on my last semester as a senior when they called me in, and they gave me full credit for the whole semester of 1943, and I was supposed to be graduating and got the diploma of the class of 43 in the University of Illinois, though I wasn't. I was in service at the time. So I was lucky there.
Ephesians 4, 1 through 6, that's been a special verse. Now, you cited many verses that throughout the years you've grown to love or appreciate or cling to, but talk a little about why Ephesians 4, 1 through 6 is special for you.
Well, because he was a prisoner, Paul was a prisoner. Read that, Helen, that verse.
I urge you then, I who am a prisoner, because I serve the Lord, live a life that measures up to the standard God set when he called you. Be always humble, gentle, and patient. Show your love by being tolerant with one another. Do your best to preserve the unity which the Spirit gives by means of the peace that binds you together. There is one body and one Spirit, just as there is one hope to which God has called you. There is one Lord, one faith, one baptism. There is one God and Father of all mankind, who is Lord of all, works through all, and is all. And I must tell you that my husband Ernest, when he lost his pilot's license, gave his favorite airplane to the Wings of Hope so they can take it overseas and ferry people back and forth to hospitals that don't have a way to go.
That was somewhat recently, because I know he's served or flown for 70 years or had his pilot's license.
He had saved one airplane that his son will pilot.
I had two airplanes.
Now, I also know, Ernest, that Isaiah chapter 40, beginning at verse 26, is another favorite passage of yours. How come?
Well, because of the wings of eagle. I like that especially. In fact, I've asked that to be at my service.
Yeah.
51. I'll read this one.
But those who trust in the Lord for help will find their strength renewed. They will rise up on wings like eagles. They will run and not get weary. They will walk and not grow weak.
That was my favorite verse, was in the run of the prisoner. I knew about it, but it meant more to me after I was a prisoner than it was before what Paul is. Those are two of my favorite. I got a whole list of ones that I use, but...
And I'm sure during that period of time when you were under solitary confinement and just the mistreatment of being a prisoner of war, I mean, not the food you're used to,
I wasn't physically mistreated, but I was mentally mistreated to the point of bread and water and a little soup is all you had to eat, and no entertainment, no talking to any American, no reading anything.
And how would you say your relationship with God during that period, what was that like? Were there a lot of questions or anger at God or why God?
No, I can't feel it. I felt that way about it. I just hoped I would say, I wouldn't say the wrong thing. I would say that was the pressure that you kept hammering at you all the time. How do we know you're not a spy? We shoot spies. If you're a Japanese prisoner, the first question you wouldn't answer, they cut your finger off. You wouldn't ask the second, we won't do that, but, and they'd always leave you in suspense as to what they might do to you. And this is when you prayed for strength. You sustain yourself that you wouldn't make a mistake or try not to.
Mm-hmm. But the men that dug the tunnel and escaped, they caught 50 of them and shot them. And the guards did have some humanity. They allowed the prisoners that didn't get shot to make a makeshift memorial to those 50. And Ernest got to see that. He's been over there 2 times. Mm-hmm. So they did have some humanity about them.
The guards themselves are human, just like we were. And, of course, Hitler gave the order that all POWs, if Germany lost the war, would be shot. But that German officer did not follow his orders. Mm. Thank heaven. Mm.
Because of the time, and there's so much more to your story, and I know there's an article entitled Freedom is Not Free, and I want to talk more about how we can honor our veterans and honor you, the service that you did on behalf of our freedoms in this country, because you were a POW for a little less than a year. Many of us can't even understand what that would be like, what it'd be like to be incarcerated and mistreated and shot down and fighting in battle, in harm's way. So I'm going to ask you both to stay in the studio. Helen, thanks for sitting so patiently, and we're going to have you enter into some of this conversation because I want to know what went on in your life during World War II and what it's like to be married to this senior saint, this almost 92-year-old Ernest. And Wanza, maybe we'll have you share a little more of your story tomorrow. Thanks for pulling out those prize drawing winners and being a part of this broadcast and introducing your uncle to our Great News Radio listeners. So be sure to tune in tomorrow for part two of our discussion with Ernest N. Thorpe and also with his wife Helen of these past 6 years. And we appreciate all of our veterans. So if you didn't get a chance on Sunday to thank a veteran, hey, it's never too late. They've served for us. They've been in harm's way. Even their families that have given up the sacrifice of being with their loved ones when they've been overseas or stationed at different posts throughout the world. So honor a veteran today. Maybe take them out to eat. Maybe send them a nice card, some words of encouragement. Just thank them. Or as Ernest mentioned off air to me, just listen to them. Let them share some of their life story. Allow them to talk and just engage in conversations. And let's remember to appreciate the freedoms that we have came at a cost.
In case you tuned in late, the interview you've been listening to was recorded a year ago with Ernest and Helen Thorpe of the Wapella area. Ernest's niece, Wanza, said, "Oh, you got to meet my Uncle Mark. He's got a powerful transformational story in being a World War II veteran and POW. It fits great with honoring our veterans today and tomorrow." So be sure to tune in for part two tomorrow for the Tuesday edition of Mark and Friends. Thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks for being a part of this radio listening family. This is Mark Burns with the Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you, and have a great day and night.